it is time to bring in our good friends from the Lakeville Journal. Of course, they join us every morning on a Thursday morning, and we have a packed house in the interview room. I've never seen so much paper on that table in a long time. Good morning, Cynthia. And what's going on with you guys in there?
It's intimate in here. It's intimate and cozy on a hot day.
All right. Who do you have in there with you?
Quincy, what's your name?
Quincy. And Arthur.
And what's your name?
And Day.
And it sounds like your mic is not working, Cynthia, so we're going to try this. Now talk.
How's that? Is that better? That sounds
better
to me.
It's better when you don't have mute on.
Yeah. Good. I take no responsibility for that.
I take every bit of responsibility. And we're not going to mute the following person. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning.
And how are you?
Good. How's everybody? It's nice to know there's a full house.
There is a full house today. And I actually wanted to start off with Compass today because it's such an amazing Compass. But
go ahead.
No.
Fine with me.
We have to start off. We start off with the news because the news is the news.
All right. We'll skate through it quickly and leave lots of time for Ann.
we've got a really continuing controversy because there is no closing date set for the maternity unit, but then again, there is no date to keep it open for the maternity unit either.
Yeah, because it's not anxious enough to be pregnant. there was a meeting of the Sharon Selectmen. They met with Peter Cordeau, the president of the hospital, and Janet was there. Do you want to talk about it at all? Do you want me to talk about it?
Oh, go ahead. You know, you are very familiar with it. I'm happy to add in anything.
So it's part of this ongoing conversation with HealthQuest and Sharon Hospital, where HealthQuest had come in as part of their certificate of need, said to the state, we won't change anything or close anything for 3 years. We will expand the maternity ward. And then they looked at the numbers and decided that the numbers weren't quite what they had expected them to be. There's a lot of negotiating going on behind the scenes. There's a lot of details, I think, that none of us know except for maybe the couple people that are negotiating. But the upshot is, as you said, there's no clear real sense in the community of what's happening. And I think that that's the thing we hear the most often is that people feel there's not a lot of transparency that's going on.
And what's even worse than that feeling, I think the feeling that's in the community is that it's a done deal and that it's going to close. I think that's the sub-feeling under that other feeling.
No matter what they say.
Yeah.
And there's sort of a shifting line on those dates, but there is negotiating going on. And there is an axis of OBGYN power between the Sharon practice that's so dominant in the area and does such great work. I love my doctor there. And the hospital, and that's an ongoing complex negotiation, and it seems like there has not yet been an understanding between the two parties.
Okay, Under the Steam in Salisbury is a story that I take very much to heart. Those bears, and they are absolutely right, that are invading Noble Horizons, are the big bear and the small bear that came down from where we are, and the small bear is the bear that I took video of, and my next-door neighbor, Reg Lampson, took video of trying to get into his house, but he left garbage on his front porch.
I'm going to have Quincy talk about this because he's our bear correspondent, but I want to say that somebody said to me at the post office, if a bear is in your house, then they have to shoot it. And I don't know if that's correct or not, but it does seem like it didn't used to be something that I would think about, but now it's something that I think about.
If it's in your house, if you left, let's say, a window open and lots of garbage out there, and it gets on your porch, no. But if a bear gets in your house.
Yeah. So, Quincy, do you want to talk about this?
All right, last week and the weeks before, there were bears that went into Salisbury, the town itself, and measures were taken against them so that they wouldn't return. They replaced a number of the dumpsters, and clearly that hasn't been working across the board. There are still bears that are going into Salisbury. And as the article describes, there are a number of policies that mean that the biologists can't do all that they feel like they should do to make the bears actually stay away. And whether or not you agree that those policies shouldn't be there, there are some consequences to that.
You know, what's interesting is Noble Horizons has the cottages, and everybody has garbage.
Right.
Of course, that would be an expensive proposition for everybody to get the proper garbage cans for the summertime. That would be a very expensive proposition.
Yeah.
But there's probably some way around it. But the worst thing to do is to try to put out bait food around the trap when you know you have other smaller animals that are
Yeah.
Kind of eat it.
Well, so this bear did get into my my friend's cottage.
Yeah, wow.
And so they're not just in Salisbury. We had one in our office in Falls Village.
Yeah. It's part of living up here, and they get more and more friendly with people, or used to people.
Yeah, hungrier and hungrier.
It's absolutely amazing.
Get those donuts.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to say anything else that'll get me in trouble. All right. I love the front picture. The picture on the front page about the people that have hiked to the top of 31 African mountains.
I'm going to let Anne talk about that because Anne not only took the photo but was the inspiration for that story.
Well, I learned a few things when I met Francis Tapon and his wife, Rejoice. They spoke at the Congregational Church 2 weeks ago. But one thing is that there are not 31 mountains. They climbed, Francis has climbed 50. His goal was to climb 54 because there are 54 countries in Africa, and his goal was to climb the tallest peak in every African country. And he was denied entry to only 4 countries. So he climbed 50, and then at a certain point in his travels, he was in Cameroon, and he met his future wife, who had a Muslim name, but she changed it to Rejoice, because she had some very, very scary things happen to her as a child. And when she finally became free of all of that, she changed her name. But then when they met, then they climbed 31 together. But they're interesting people. He's got a website. It's all in the story, and that's all I have to say because we don't want to take the whole
We don't want to take up time from Compass.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or from Cynthia.
Next big story, and it's a story that you just don't get used to. Another Housatonic student has died in a crash, and if you take the crash that took the Silvernail life and then the other crash, we've lost 4 young people in horrible crashes over the past several months.
And, of course, this article is about the 3 in Connecticut. There was another one in
New York State.
Yeah. And I would say, generally, we're fairly fortunate around here. I would say, it's every couple of years we have these tragic young people die. It's been an extremely bad summer for it. And so we sent Arthur on Tuesday, was it? What day did we send you to the
Yeah, it was Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah.
Do you want to describe that a little bit, just quickly?
Yeah, so I went to the Survive the Drive clinic that was held at Lime Rock Park, and I got a chance to talk with Bob Green, who was the founder of Survive the Drive, and they do this every year for a number of teens, and Bob actually goes around to a lot of the local high schools, and he gives presentations that are not based on fear or scaring people out of driving, but are just simply based on facts. And it's actually, I got a chance to sit in and listen to him talk about it. And he speaks very well, and he speaks very powerfully about car crashes and fatalities. And then they went out and they were doing some sort of maneuvers and skills that are necessary to be practiced if you ever get into dangerous situations. Particularly working on sort of braking quickly and then, swerving and practicing, your control when you go into a skid or something like that, which is something that you don't get taught every day in driving lessons, but is something that's really important because there's always going to be those moments that are unavoidable and you have to know how to deal with it.
So Arthur's going to have an article on that in next week's paper with some tips for young drivers that we hope everyone will read.
All right. And then in Nature's Notebook, an ode to AC and ice cubes.
I know that everybody's upset about this power plant, but I got to say, I'm so happy to have air conditioning. And I don't even like air conditioning, but it's been so hot lately. So a nice little column from Tim Abbott, the wonderful air conditioning, ice cubes, the things we love in the peak of summer.
Do you guys, any of you remember, I used to make these things when I was a kid, and I'm probably giving this to you because you're fairly close to my ancient age, but there used to be
Don't
a thing
that
you would put a tray in. You would put a tray in the bottom, and you would put ice in it and a little bit of water,
and run the fan
and
over
you
it.
Put a fan. No, yeah. It had a fan in it, and for about 20 minutes, it worked.
Yeah.
That was way before my time, Marshall.
Yeah, Marshall. Do you remember that great scene in The 7-Year Itch when Marilyn Monroe has got the refrigerator door open and a thing of ice, and she's like sitting in the bathtub or something?
And she used to put her underwear in the freezer.
Right, that's what it was.
Marshall, do you remember when you used to have to crank your car to get it started with your hand?
Basically, almost.
Yeah, I remember. Have a feeling that fan was your grandmother's, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Ring of Fire, Remembrances at the Clambake, the Jane Lloyd Fund Clambake. Some great color pictures on page A3.
You know, Patrick Sullivan is just such a treasure. And so, and I would say he doesn't love everything that he has to cover, but he does love the Clambake. And every year, even though it's exactly the same thing, he writes a new funny story about it. So it's one of those stories that's worth reading just because Patrick wrote it, but also great photos. And we've got our own Mark Needhammer is in there, and Nick Birchfield, who's the son of Caroline and the younger brother of one of our most favorite interns, Will Birchfield. And there it is, the beautiful stacks and stacks and stacks of corn.
All right, I want to go to a story by that Shaw did out of Wednesday. Dogs trained to be friends and lifesavers.
Is that the cutest photo ever? Yeah. The little dog sitting under the desk. But you know, even though the dog looks like it's so nervous and it needs its daddy, it's the daddy who needs that doggy. So this is a dog that's been trained to keep an eye on its owner, and in fact, you know, it's so tuned into its owner that has been trained to be so tuned in that he knew that his blood sugar was dropping while he was out on a camping trip and got him to safety. So there's a new office, Educated Canines Assisting with Disabilities, has opened in Winstead, and a nice description of what the organization does and some of the people they've helped.
And speaking about Shaw and I were walking after the Canine Firemen's Parade. He's got a couple of stories on that, and we both wish we could have got it onto the fun train that went by.
Oh, that's a nice photo he's got of that, too.
It would have been impossible. The train would have never made it up the hill.
Yeah.
That's right.
Shaw's a big man.
Well, I'm
a big barrel of fun.
Hey, to me, I like to stay. Shaw likes to stand next to me because all of a sudden he's thin.
He says, well, I don't know that, but.
All right. The Pooch Place Resort, that is a vacation place for doggies.
It's all sorts of stuff for dogs, and it's grooming, and I think that they take cats, too. And so we've been hearing about them. They took up that nice space near the Blackberry River in East Canaan, and very experienced pet groomer and caretaker, and read Lula Hawkins' description of all the services that are available and the groovy mural that she painted on their building.
All right, and there's some new ordinances that have been passed by the town of Sharon.
You know, it's this ongoing thing about blight, and what is blight, and do you want to start an ordinance about it that maybe comes back and bites you in the bottom? But so Sharon has put some ordinances out. I would say that they're less specific and less hardcore than they were originally discussed to be, but I think that that's probably better from a legal point of view.
All right, and on the obituary page, of course, Donald Blodgett, but also two people that I had known a long, long time, and that's Mr. Cinotti's wife, Dot, and Rudy Eichbach from Aminaway. Both have passed away, and our thoughts and prayers go out to all those families.
Yeah, and of course, Roe Cinotti, one of my favorite people.
Oh, just a great guy. I was a freshman when he came back to Housatonic, moved back from Hawaii to begin second stint there. So hey, that's how ancient I am. That's close to cranking cars. Kent Presents, and we've known about this for a while, but our correspondent, Susan Silver, first found out about it this year. And by the time she booked a room, the closest she could get to stay was Pauling, New York.
Holy smokes.
You wait, you lose, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of people coming for this.
But it's booked, and it's really turned into
a
huge event.
She could stay at my house for 1,000 a night.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
A bargain.
Me too. Yeah. Kent Presents, quite a big deal, and we have two articles about. One is that, you know, about the grants that were given from last year's event, because this is a fundraiser for local charities. I think they're like 38 or something that benefited. They made a lot of money. And really, you know, very little of the money that they raise from their $2,500 tickets goes to organizers. It really mostly goes to charities and nonprofits, very interesting ones. And so we've been getting emails from some of the charities that benefited last year saying, please make sure you put the list in the paper of who was granted money so that people know to apply for this, because this is a really amazing thing. So they're coming up, I think, not this weekend, the weekend of the 18th, 19th. very interesting speakers. There's going to be a talk on blockchain that our columnist Dan Pelberg will attend, and he's actually got his column on the page this week. But Michael Pollan talking about You Know What, his new exciting topic, and yeah, lots of interesting people talking about world affairs, and it's always surprising. People always come out and say, that's not what I expected it to be. It was so much better than I expected it to be.
All right, I want to go on to the editorial page, and the editorial, Sharon, Hospital Under Fire, but we need to listen. Janet, the floor is yours.
Right. You know, we need to listen from all sides, and we talk about the difficulty with communication on the proposed closing of the maternity unit at Sharon Hospital. We will give Peter Cordeau credit for being out there, though, and coming to, for instance, that selectmen's meeting that Lila Hawken reported on the front page alone, and knew that there would be lots of people there asking lots of questions and, you know, trying to understand what was going on. And, you know, he, I think, did very well putting the information out there and trying to make it as clear as possible, but he has not changed his story in any way. It's still, you know... He's talking about the fact that it's not a financial decision, so bringing in money from elsewhere really isn't the answer. You know, it's based in safety and volume and coverage for the unit. So we talk about that, and hope people will read and listen carefully to what's going on and be involved. And we have lots of great letters this week on all different things. Of course, we have our primary elections coming up, so we have a couple of election letters, but also one about the burning fossil fuel at CVEC, and Billy writing a very short but pithy letter, The Way It Was, It Is Now. And don't miss our columns as well.
Yeah, you know, the letter about the power plant, I first started reading that, I was very upset at the letter. Very upset, because I said, well, you know, natural gas is a better fuel to power a power plant than anything we have now. But then they do point out some other things that are scary, especially with the current administration. You can't trust the EPA anymore.
Right, as far as monitoring the air.
You just can't trust the EPA anymore. It's a terrible thing to say, but you can't. So even though I disagree with the initial point of the letter, I think it's a very good focal point of that letter is that the way the EPA is set up now, boy, it's tough.
I think that's a lot of what this protest against Cricket Valley is about people feeling anxiety that they can't trust the government.
Yeah,
and so, yeah, it's always good to read these letters to the end. There's always a couple good points in there.
All right. And, I never mentioned Peter Steiner's cartoon from last week, but it still has me laughing. And this one just continues on the tradition.
Yeah, he's amazing, isn't he? The images he comes up with, and that's the power of that visual, the cartoon. It just sticks with you. So, yeah, don't miss Peter's cartoon. Mark Godburn on eyeball injections, Dick Ollis on history, and Carol Asher on Connecticut being a sanctuary state. And Mike Duca on getting things done in America.
Super funny.
Oh, he's a good guy, Mike. He's a very funny guy. Ask him about the time you went to...
That'll be the next column.
I don't know. No, he wouldn't let me put the tape on the air, so I don't think there'll be a column on it. The story I want to talk about is a little one before we get to Compass, and that is the $40,000 Visual Art Award that's granted, which is an amazing, amazing award. Went to the Housatonic Senior this year. That's just...
Right, and it's a nice little write-up that they sent us, actually, about she didn't... she really came to school feeling like, I have nothing to offer. I'm nobody. And then found art and then got this incredible, very large scholarship.
It's an unbelievable scholarship that they issue out every year.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
So, again, we put all those on our Family and Friends page along with scholarship application and grant information. So people should read that page.
All right. Now, the Compass... I love the picture on the front of the modern sculpture, but you're packed and ready to go here, and it's all yours.
Oh, well, thank you. yes, the picture on the front is, there's a Chesterwood, which is the home of Daniel Chester French up in Stockbridge, or Lenox. I get them mixed up, sorry. It's in the story. But that's George Rickey, who's one of my favorite modern sculptors. There's not that many modern sculptors that I like, but I like him. So it's a contemporary show.
He's giving you the time. He said 5 minutes.
It's a contemporary show, but at a very classical, the home of a very classical sculptor. Daniel Chester French, as you all know, is the person who did the Abraham Lincoln sculpture in the Lincoln Memorial in Washington. Mm. And here we have, in first story we have is in Sharon, we've got Barefoot in the Park, reviewed by Leon. He said the performances were fantastic. The stories, it's an old story. It's a dated a little bit, but it's worth watching because of the great performances. So I'm definitely going.
And it's great that the Playhouse stepped out, and they're not all musicals, but they picked a non-musical.
Right.
I think a great show for a non-musical.
Right. And also that play, Barefoot in the Park, I believe is one of the longest running plays in the history of the world.
Hmm.
It ran on Broadway for 10 years or something. Don't believe me. That's not a fact. But it ran for a long time.
It's a sense. We have a sense that. Right.
Yes. It's 500 years it ran.
Google it.
We're used to those facts in this administration.
But
right.
At least we're stating it as it is.
Right. Anyway, it was obviously a popular play. Okay, now this is the next story, which I think is fascinating. The New York Times fashion critic, whose name is Vanessa Friedman, has written a book about the politics of dressing like a woman. And she decided to write the book after Trump complained that some women weren't dressing properly for the office. So she thought, well, what does this really mean to dress properly for the office? And as you can see from the photographs, these photographs are how those women dress for the office. There's an astronaut in her space suit, and then there are four Hopi women who are making grinding grain dress for their job. So really, how are you supposed to dress for the job?
Depends on the job, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And Alexander Wilburn has done a long, interesting interview with Vanessa Friedman, and Vanessa Friedman will be at the book signing party in Sharon tomorrow at the Hotchkiss Library in Sharon. Then we also have about another author from the Hotchkiss Library in Sharon, which is Henry Alford. And Divya Simmers, whose name I spelled wrong. I'm really, really sorry, Divya, if you're listening. I don't know how I can make it up to you because I hate it when people spell my name wrong.
Free tickets to something, I'll do.
Yeah, for something. I'm going to have to buy her a hamburger at McDonald's.
Give her another assignment.
Simmers is spelled Symmers, not S-I. But anyway, she's written a lovely story about Henry Alford, who wrote a book about learning to dance at age 50. And it's humor. He's a humorist, and he will also be at the book signing. We also have a review of a show in Hudson, which I think looks fantastic. This gallery is enormous. It has outdoor space and indoor space, and there are five artists there. It's called the John Davis Gallery. I kind of like to have one or two pieces, at least one every week, that forces you to get out of your comfort zone. And Hudson should be in your comfort zone, but it might not be for everybody. And then we have the Kent Sidewalk Festival. There's a full schedule in the middle of Compass. There's food, books, clothing, entertainment, and more. Let's see. I might have used up my time.
No.
You have 40
seconds left for Capitol Steps.
We've got the Capitol Steps in Lenox. C.B. Wismar loves them. They're satirists. They're funny. I've heard them on the radio. I actually heard them in Washington once years ago. And then we have a wonderful food story by Marsden about eating tree blossoms. Tree ears, they're called. And there's a recipe also. Am I finished? Is that enough?
You're finished. You're finished.
Okay.
And don't miss calendar.
Miss calendar. Everything's in calendar. Yeah. All the great things happening. Calendar's crazy to keep up with in the summer because there's so much exciting stuff here.
We live in an area that we take for granted. Yes,
it's
we do.
True.
All right. Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
All right, that is it for this weekend, the Lakeville Journal. Of course, you can find them online, tricornernews.com, or, of course, on Facebook, and I do even believe they're on Instagram.